This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Authorities are reopening the case of a Western North Carolina woman who died under mysterious circumstances. Felicia Reeves was found dead in a New Jersey motel room in August of 2015. Police were quick to say Reeves committed suicide, but she once suggested on social media that she was a police informant, and that raised questions about whether someone might have wanted her dead. Police in New Jersey did not follow up on that lead in their investigation, and the case has only become more perplexing as new information emerges. Reeves' sister recently got a threatening call from an unidentified source that wanted her to stop looking into her sister's death. Frank Taylor's been digging into this case for several months. He's managing editor of Carolina Public Press, and he joins me from WCQS in Asheville. Frank Taylor, welcome.
Thank you.
Take us back to August 19th, 2015. Felicia Reeves suddenly leaves North Carolina, travels to New York. What do we know about that trip?
Not much, actually. She checked out of a motel in Hendersonville, where she'd been living for some time, close to where her parents lived. And she didn't tell anybody she was leaving town. We can trace some of her movements via some receipts that showed up after she was found dead. It appears she ended up in Manhattan by the 21st. Not sure whether she went by plane or train or some other means, but she ended up at Penn Station in Manhattan. We could see she went to Queens that same day. That evening, she seems to have checked into a motel in Elizabeth, New Jersey, which is just across from Manhattan, just east of Newark. And then she was found dead in the motel room, reported by the motel staff, hanging in the bathroom of that motel room in Elizabeth, New Jersey, on the 28th of August. Why she was there, how she came to die, are unanswered questions in some respects.
Of course, she was there several days after found dead, several days after she checked in. The police were quick to call this a suicide.
Yeah, the dispatcher, you know, initially said, "Hey, we've got a suicide. Come and look." And as we've looked, I'm not trying to say this to be critical of the police necessarily, but as we looked at their coverage of the case, their handling of the case, they never really looked at it not being a suicide. It seemed like an open and shut suicide case to them. I think you've got a body found hanging in a motel room. But there were a lot of reasons we were really suspicious about it, and the family was suspicious. That's why it was brought to us. It didn't come to our attention independently. For one thing, she seemed to have been going places and doing things that didn't suggest she was intending to kill herself. There was a discrepancy about the police viewing of a surveillance video that they said nobody went in and out of that room. We can see that from her receipts she was in Manhattan during part of the time she supposedly was in the room. The anonymous caller, well, the person who called up her sister just within the last few months and said, "Stop pushing this," they claimed to be with the police, didn't leave a name, and they were using an untraceable line. But they said, "Oh, that's nonsense about the surveillance footage. We only meant that nobody but her went in out of the room." Well, maybe that's true. It's interesting that they would say that in a harassing call instead of making an official call and saying, why did they wait so long to say this? We reported on this case and that particular issue back in February, and that's far from the only discrepancy with the case. There are problems with the autopsy. Her anatomy was described incorrectly in the autopsy. There are a number of things that make us think that this case wasn't looked at as closely as it should have been initially.
Not to mention the train ticket from Penn Station that would have taken her out of the area several days after her death.
That's right. In fact, that's one of the key pieces of evidence. I believe it was the 23rd. We can see that she was in Penn Station, purchased a train ticket, had that back in her hotel room in New Jersey. Apparently, as far as we can tell, she nor anybody else ever used that ticket. A little hard to confirm that, but it doesn't appear that anybody did. And she certainly was found back in New Jersey a few days later.
Many of the other questions around this surround Felicia Reeves herself and some of her activities. So maybe we need to do a little background on Felicia, retired military. And so tell us a little bit more about her.
Sure. She certainly was somebody who had some unfortunate things happen in her life. But she was retired from the military. She had disability. Suffered from PTSD, was on medication through the VA as a result of that experience in the military. She had been involved with a spouse who was abusive. He went to prison after attacking her repeatedly. He recently has been back in the news, involved with drug trafficking, and that's one of the questions, is whether there was a connection there with what he was doing. She was cleaning. She was a police informant. We also think there's reason to suspect she was tied up with a human trafficking ring. She received a text from somebody who claimed they saw an advertisement for her services on Backpages. The text came to her phone after she was dead. And, of course, we can't see what might have come in and been deleted to the phone before that. And so Backpages is a website that is notorious for its ties to human trafficking. The evidence from this call shows that somebody was soliciting a service that she was not licensed to provide. It clearly is not really something she would have been doing. So was it a code for some other type of service?
And there's other connections to the possibility that human trafficking is involved,
right.
including some time she spent in Kentucky, right?
That's correct. She spent some time in Kentucky. We've talked with the state prosecutor's office in Kentucky, and where she was in Kentucky was just across the state line from Tennessee. State prosecutor's office in Kentucky has worked with us, and so we can confirm that she was not an informant for us on anything that happened here. State prosecutor's office, it's the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, has told us we cannot confirm one way or the other. We're not allowed to confirm one way or the other whether she was an informant for us. But we can see that right around the time she left Kentucky and came back to North Carolina, there was a very large human trafficking bust in Clarksville, Tennessee, very close to where she was. She was in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And we've asked the question, could she have been connected if she was passing on information to this large bust? We don't know. It's speculative, but the timing is interesting based on what we have learned about her case.
Well, it's interesting because we here at the State of Things did a whole segment on human trafficking and talked to a police officer from Raleigh who said that, you know, it took a lot of work for them to realize that the way they were looking at some cases that involved either prostitution or drugs or abuse had links in ways that they had never imagined before, because they were investigating only prostitution or drugs or abuse. And when they learned to see things differently, then they could make these connections. And it sounds a lot like whatever this case involves, that kind of connection, those sort of connections, is not the kind of investigation that went on here.
That's correct, and it's worth pointing out there was a previous case at the same motel in New Jersey where she was found, where a previous woman was found dead at that motel, and that case has also been linked to suspected human trafficking based on conversations I've had with journalists who were working in New Jersey covering that case.
So tell us more about the family and keeping this case alive. Certainly the family's been very active. Carolina Public Press has kept our attention focused on it. What have those efforts involved and apparently yielded a reopening of the case?
I think that's a very accurate description of it. Felicia's sister, Susan Beorjian, who is from Western North Carolina but currently resides in Wisconsin, really was the driver on this, and she continued to push through a letter writing, email writing campaign to various agencies in various states, asking them, can you please take another look at this case? That was apparently what resulted in the harassing phone call. But we did an update report just before the anniversary of Felicia's death last week, in which we mentioned that she had received a response from the governor's office in New Jersey, Chris Christie's office, and somebody with his office said, we've looked at your request. We're passing it on to the Union County Prosecutor's Office, who would be the appropriate party to investigate, and we'll ask them to think about what they want to do. So then we learned at the beginning of this week, Union County Prosecutor's Office has indeed said we are going to assign a review of this entire case and of the handling of it by the police department in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And we're assigning this to multiple detectives for investigation. Those detectives are in our homicide task force. They have been very careful to avoid using the exact term reopen. In fact, they balked a little bit about that term when a TV station we've been working with on this, WLOS in Asheville, contacted them about it. And I wasn't aware of their hesitancy on that. But I think the point is, this is a new investigation. They're not reopening the old one. They are doing a review of the old case. But this is essentially a new investigation by entirely new officers. It's not the detectives from the city police doing it this time.
And so this would be at the county level, but not quite the state level. So it's not as though the state of New Jersey is looking into the handling.
That's correct. The way they're organized in New Jersey is a little bit different than North Carolina. Generally, you might see a sheriff's office, for instance, take over a case like this, and they would review it in North Carolina. Or you might see it go to the SBI at the state level in North Carolina. There, the key party is the prosecutor's office. It would be equivalent to our DA. And they have a homicide task force under most prosecutor's office. They may have them under all of them in New Jersey. And so that is his handling the homicide investigation. And had this been ruled a homicide initially or suspected homicide initially by police, that's who the case would have gone to. It would immediately have been moved from the police to the prosecutor's office, who then would handle the investigation to try to figure out what had happened. The determination that it was a homicide is all that the police would handle in New Jersey.
Only have a couple seconds left, Frank, but any interest by authorities in North Carolina?
Yes. Hendersonville police have recently reached out to the family as well, and they're looking at some questions related to the disappearance of Felicia and particularly how she disappeared. And I have learned some new information on that I can't divulge yet for source reasons, but we expect to be following up on this as soon as we can.
And we will follow up with you. As always, thank you very much for your work, Frank.
Thank you.
Frank Taylor, managing editor of the Carolina Public Press. You can find out more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we'll take a look at French heritage in the Old North State. Talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Do stay with us.